Spot. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Hey, there's a few inches of snow on the ground, but you know what?
What?
At least we're not Boston.
At least we're not Boston. At least we're not any surrounding states in the New England area. How did New York, how much snow did New York get?
That all depends on what parts of New York you're talking about. If you're talking about regular New York City, they're in a deep freeze right now. But in terms of all of New York, oh, good grief. You're talking parts of Buffalo are, I guess, head deep in snow, and they're up to their eyeballs in it.
I know that New York is called the Big Apple, but it's not called the city that never sleeps. That's Las Vegas, right? The city that never sleeps?
Yeah, that's Las Vegas.
But you could call New York the same kind of nickname there, though.
The city that never sleeps.
Except when it's snowing outside, then people just stay indoors.
I mean, I know L.A. is the city of brotherly love, the city that never sleeps.
Chicago's the Windy City. Baltimore's Charm City. Yeah, so, I mean, it's kind of weird, like, the nicknames, though.
Nope, but it was New York, dude.
Oh, really? New York is the city that never sleeps.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Las Vegas is one that doesn't sleep either, but have you ever been in New York? You ever been in New York?
A few times, just driving by, yeah.
Just a few times, just driving by?
I kind of had the Simpsons kind of tour, where we would stop and get hot dogs in Clav Kalash. Actually, I'm just kidding, just hot dogs.
I got it. Well, I actually walked in New York City, and if you're not going at least a little bit of a faster pace, like you're speed walking,
you're going to get walked over.
You're getting run over easily, and you're going to miss the metro.
Yeah, and you usually are a better walker than a runner anyway, so that would work out better for you.
Hey, I mean, I kept up with the pace pretty good.
Yeah, because it was life or death.
Well, I mean, I used to live in Baltimore City, so I'm used to, you know, kind of like a city life that it's always get up and go, and you're walking everywhere you go instead of driving everywhere you go. If you drive everywhere you go, you're going to lose your parking spot.
Yeah, and you'll have those people that put the chairs out in the parking spots like they own the parking spot.
That's illegal, by the way.
That is definitely illegal. I mean, I get annoyed when I see that. Like, look, we get it. You want to save your spot, but, you know, Baltimore is a city. People do stop in the city once in a while, and they need a place to park, so.
Now, I dug you out a spot in front of the studio, and you parked somewhere else. I was like, oh, come on. I went to all this work to get you a spot, and here you are. You parked somewhere else. Someone else parked into it anyway, so.
Yeah.
It is what it is. Ray Rice apologizes to Baltimore. That will be one of the things that we talk about right now. It's just a story that just doesn't go away, but maybe this letter is an exclamation point on that story. No, the exclamation point on that story is going to be when he gets signed by somebody. But then also Orioles, who's going to be in the outfield? Spoiler alert, center field's covered.
Yeah, left field, right field, they're going to have some competition even with the Travis Snyder trade. So do expect several guys to be in the mix there. Also,
Terps are on the rebound.
Terps are on the rebound, men especially. They climbed back a few spots, going from number 19 to number 16 in the nation. They still have number 5 Wisconsin on the horizon, and who knows, maybe luckily they'll get Wisconsin on in a good mood more so than a bad mood.
And they get them at home.
And they get them at home. Where Maryland has actually been decent this year is at the Xfinity Center. Also, the sport of Little League Baseball, with the current situations that have been happening with Jackie Robinson West and all the other situations that have occurred with Little League Baseball in the last several years, is the sport, which is played primarily by young children, tainted?
Well, it's Little League, so you would think that, yeah, it would be played by young children.
Well, of course. Yeah, I mean, come on.
I mean, there are age scandals, though, that go on in Little League.
I mean, they're not taking steroids. I mean, knock on wood here, I hope not.
always assume the worst, Josh. Some Little League team is juicing their players.
Some Little League teams are bringing in kids much older. You'll see the pitcher on the mound. He's got a little mustache growing out there. And you're wondering, should I be playing against this guy?
Aren't you supposed to be 10? We don't grow mustaches at 10.
Aren't you hitting puberty right now? I mean, I'm not even hitting puberty.
Who hits puberty at 10, though?
Yeah, it's hey, some kids hit growth spurts at 10. I mean, that's not considered puberty, though. That's just regular.
No, that's
yeah.
What is that? Preteens, I guess.
Preteens, yeah.
Yeah, so. But you're preteens. You're in your double-digit years, but it's usually like when you're around 13, 14 when you go through puberty.
Yep, and we will have our two-minute rant. Mine is going to be basically defending a player who's defending his coach against the media. Ray's will be...
It will be about a player that you probably didn't know still existed in MLB. Jason Giambi retired on Tuesday.
All right, and let's go ahead and start the show, which is...
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, which you can find on...
SFMSports.net.
And you can also catch us on Facebook.
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All Podcast.
Twitter.
At BSportsFree, the number four all.
Your blog, please say the name of it, because it took me so long to think of the name, and then you changed it on me. Now you're having trouble with it, so I'm curious.
I'm not
Mr.
having
Hall.
Trouble with it.
Now I'm curious, Mr. Hall, what is the name of your blog?
The Sunday Night Sports Delight, which you can find on Blogger, or just Google it. It'll pop up.
The Sunday Night Sports Delight.
It's been getting popular as of late, though, so that is a good sign.
Yeah, it also, maybe not so much for its content, so much as its name. Some people might think that they're in for... And for some reckoning there with a Sunday Night Sports Delight.
Let's not even go there right now. And by the way, let's bring up your gaming page on YouTube.
Oh, yeah, that's Sleepy Bear Gaming now. It's a YouTube thing kicking off. We're up to, I want to say, 600 likes on Facebooks right now.
Yeah, so much so the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All is going to be nearly climbing 800 likes, hopefully by the end of this week. So.
Yeah, I'm always confusing the two because you're running a podcast, you're running a YouTube page, you're running a business, you're doing everything like this. Luckily, there's not a family involved right there.
Yeah, for those of you who are fans of both pages there and are going to be posing the question, is there a rivalry brewing behind the scenes? No, there isn't. Okay, we're not in a likes competition right now.
No, they do share the same equipment, though.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm still haven't been invited on a show yet, but hopefully one of these days.
I invited you a couple weeks ago.
I do the blog on Sundays. You know that.
Yeah, well, make time for it. Blog and game at the same time. Multitask.
Yeah, not with
grow a third arm.
Not with you guys there. Not with you guys there. You're going to be distracting me for the entire time.
That's what we do. We're entertaining here on Sleepy Bear Gaming.
Yeah, but this is not Sleepy Bear Gaming. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
That it is.
To start off the show, just like we did on the last episode of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, which seemed like a long time ago because we're kind of knocked off our routine here.
A day late.
A little day late, but either way, we're going to start off with Ravens news once again, but this time it had more to do with what was posted on social media. More so, it had to do with what Ray Rice posted on his Facebook page, which seemed to be eons since Ray Rice posted anything on his official social media
Smart
pages.
Move, by the way. Very smart move.
Yeah, so we're going to go into detail on what Ray Rice said to the fans, the organization, and his teammates.
Well, he posted that, but he actually wrote the letter to the Baltimore Sun.
Absolutely, and here's a transcript of what Ray Rice said. Quote, "This is not a farewell or goodbye. The last 7 years that my family and I have spent in Baltimore have by far been the best of our lives. From the bottom of my heart, I thank you all for the love and support you've shown my family and I throughout my football career. We will always be grateful for the love we've received from all of our fans and supporters and for winning a Super Bowl. To all the kids who looked up to me, I'm truly sorry for letting you down, but I hope it's helped you learn that one bad decision can turn your dreams into a nightmare." That's definitely true there. "There is no excuse for domestic violence, and I apologize for the horrible mistake I made. I hope you can find it in your heart to forgive me, and I hope to make a positive difference in people's lives by raising awareness of this issue. Thank you, Baltimore Ravens, for all you have done for my family and I. I'm very grateful to Steve Bisciotti, Ozzie Newsome, John Harbaugh, and everyone at One Winning Drive. I love you all very much, and I'll always be proud to say that I played for the Baltimore Ravens," end quote.
Well, at least this time he's straight away from actually talking about the Ravens organization, trying to throw them under the bus because they were trying to throw him under the bus. And then, you know, everything went back and forward with the whole Roger Goodell, did he cover everything up?
Just an ugly, mishandled situation.
That it was. So this was his way of not only just letting bygones be bygones with the letter, because he was public enemy number one for the longest time. Yeah, Roger Goodell got put in the limelight a little bit. Ravens PR staff got put in the limelight a little bit. John Harbaugh, Steve Bisciotti, they all got put in the limelight until Harbaugh pretty much assumed non-responsibility for it through all the leaks that were happening. And you looked at the whole situation as a whole, and it seemed like it was going to be an ugly divorce. Yeah, at the same time, when Bisciotti initially, on that fateful September day, cut Ray Rice, it seemed like he was saying, yeah, you know, I love Ray Rice, but right now we got to go in a different direction as we attempt damage control and try to manage this situation, since punching out your fiance on a camera, it was quite shocking to people, even more so shocking than the actual act of him dragging her unconscious body outside the elevator. I mean, I just keep posing this question. What did people think that a knockout punch was going to look like?
Yeah, and that's what you said on the last episode when we were bringing up what the Ravens should do to improve their image in the offseason. And my whole take on the Ray Rice apology was this. He made the right call. He absolutely made the right moves. He didn't hold a press conference or anything. He let time go by, and during the offseason time, he just basically came out and said all the right things. He thanked his fans. He apologized to his fans. He apologized to everyone who he disappointed along the way. He was grateful to the Ravens organization and his teammates for giving him the opportunity to pursue his dreams. And you would think that in the first six seasons that Ray Rice played NFL football, he had a pretty darn good career with the Baltimore Ravens.
Notice you said six seasons, though.
Yeah.
And you failed to mention 2013, right?
I did fail to mention 2013, but yeah. Well, I do bring up six seasons because, I mean, let's face it, he played a total of six seasons. His seventh season didn't see any official game time there.
No, that was Justin Forsett and Lorenzo Taliaferro who took the ball on that one.
Now, on the same note, though, I still held true to what I've said about Ray Rice beforehand. I liked Ray Rice as a player before this incident happened. I liked him as a person before this incident happened because he was a great community guy. Once this incident took place, I found it hard to respect the person because I'm against domestic violence, just as I'm sure you're against domestic violence, as I'm sure a majority of our listeners, I hope, are against domestic violence as well.
Oh, you wouldn't know that, Josh. Come on. Do you not remember the Ray Rice timeline that was going on with some fans where it was like, oh, well, we don't have all the evidence yet. I'm like, okay, that's fine.
Well, we're talking about after the second
video. Then the video evidence comes out. It's like, we don't know what happened. She could be drunk. And then all of a sudden the punch-out video, there were still some people said, well, sometimes you just got to smack a, you know.
Well, yeah, of course. And
there are people out there who think that.
And those are people that just want to get attention out there. And we've seen all the people that were out for the second week of the season, the Thursday night game against Pittsburgh, which took place several days after that second Ray Rice video was released, and people just getting attention wearing Ray Rice 27 jerseys and say, oh, I support Ray Rice. No, you don't. You're just gaining attention.
There are, though, people in real life, Josh, who did stand behind Ray Rice even after the whole punch-out incident and said, you know what, it is what it is. What happened to giving some people a second chance and double jeopardy and everything like that? And thinking to yourself, knockout punch on video.
Yeah.
This is the first time I think a lot of people actually were exposed to a real domestic violence situation happening in nonfiction. Because, you know, it's in fiction all the time. I mean, you remember the Jennifer Lopez movie, the Enough movie, where she took a stand against her abuser?
Yeah, she killed her ex-husband by basically doing defense and kickboxing, pretty much.
Yeah, she Chuck Liddell'd him.
Yeah, because assault is not murder. Our defense is not murder. Excuse me.
Well, of course, you remember the cop coming up to her. It's like, look like you're one of the lucky ones.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I think, let me see, another work of fiction that was domestic. Well, it was a work of fiction based on nonfiction, and that was What's Love Got to Do with It with Ike and Tina Turner. It was Lawrence Fishburne as Ike. Who played Tina?
Angela Bassett played Tina.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, there was domestic violence in that movie, but like I said, that was more of a fiction-type thing based off of nonfiction.
I guess because sports is a form of entertainment, some people see these stories and think it's fictionalized at a point where it's like, there's no way this could possibly be real.
Well, this story was taken from the ground up, and they took the ball and they ran with it. Every single news outlet out there, of course, a lot of news outlets were covering their own ass because they got upended by TMZ. Yeah. how would they feel about that? I'm like, oh, we're a respected news organization. It was TMZ that got this story? What the hell? I mean, I remember seeing Adam Schefter. He looked like he was so butthurt that day because he was just disgusted at the fact because that it was TMZ that got the story and not anybody on the inside. And maybe you could think that the Goodell had something to do with that, considering that the NFL has a vested interest in ESPN and ESPN has a vested interest in the NFL. Side by side. See what happens when you give a news organization a lot of money to cover your product?
Well, NFL has vested interest in most major media markets, of course. I mean, you as anybody else knows that.
But not TMZ.
Well, not TMZ. Of course, TMZ can't, I mean, TMZ can't be bought. You have to pay them. I mean,
The whole point,
Josh. That's the whole point. I mean, the NFL...
That's what I'm trying to say.
If the NFL bought TMZ, they would be policed from the get-go, obviously. But getting back to Ray Rice and this apology he posted on Facebook, and I believe you made a post immediately after that saying, but do you forgive him? And I guess I'll go first in this whole thing. I remember posting last year immediately after the second video took place. Once I saw what happened, I said, well, he's got to go now because this is just total bedlam. And we even said on episodes prior to that that once the second video gets released, the outrage is going to be unbearable.
And we predicted the timeline that it was going to be released.
It was going to be released early.
Yeah, not going to pat ourselves on the back right there because we did kind of get
it
wrong.
Never pat ourselves on the back for something like that, but it happens. It happens in all instances it happens.
I just found it weird that we predicted like it to go down exactly as it was going to go down because, I mean, you just read the details about the tape, how he hit her so hard that her head bounced off the elevator rail and completely knocked her out, and you see the aftermath of it. I'm thinking, wow, once the actual knockout video was going to get released, and it was going to get released, I can't believe anybody under the golden sun thought that it wasn't going to be released. When that video was finally released, it painted a pretty damning picture as you know, we predicted.
Yeah, not only to Ray Rice, not only to the Baltimore Ravens, but to the majority of the NFL, because you had people coming out of the woodwork saying, what skeletons are you hiding in your closet? Not just to the Ravens, but to every other team involved in the NFL.
That we did not predict. It was the backlash against the NFL and how exactly they were like, what the hell is going on here? And then you hear all the other cases that were going on, and Adrian Peterson, victim of poor timing.
Yeah, and also
Greg Hardy, and
Ray McDonald cut, of course, because there was no healing his offseason transgressions there.
Not only that, he was hurting other players. Alden Smith, I mean, he could have violated his probation by having alcohol at that party that Ray McDonald was hosting.
Yeah.
Because that was revealed in the police report, and you're thinking to yourself, oh boy, this guy's a cancer on our team.
So last year, after those instances took place and Ray Rice was automatically cut from the Ravens, I wholeheartedly, at the time, agreed with that decision, even though it seemed sudden, because it's not a pretty image for you as an organization. It's not a pretty image for you as an NFL team, a representative of the National Football League, because you have to defend the shield. The shield should be dignified. It should be for a good cause. That's why we had the Ed Block Courage Awards for, you know, hurt families out there and children. That's for these causes out there, these foundations.
Believe in the shield.
Yeah, but do I forgive Ray Rice? I guess no. That's a tough answer for me because, yeah, it's been a year since the incident took place, and we're not even a year removed from when he was released from the Baltimore Ravens and that second video was released. I'll put it to you this way. Did Ray Rice commit an egregious crime, an egregious penalty? Absolutely he did. No question about it. Did he serve his public punishment more so than other players? Absolutely he did. He got served the criticism from his fans, from other fans of other NFL teams, and his public life for a good portion of the year was pretty much ruined. Now, ever since then, you know, he came out, he's been making the apology, he's looking to speak up against domestic violence, and that is a big step in the right direction. Do I forgive him? No. In time, could I forgive him? Possibly. Your thoughts?
Too soon. Very much too soon, because at the same time, I look at the date that he released his letter of apology. It was on the 1-year anniversary of it actually happening. and you're looking at that and him trying to, you know, court other teams, it could be a PR move, which it kind of is, and then also it could be genuine at the same time. Either or, he's playing damage control. But the smart move that this guy has made was he disappeared. He disappeared from social media. I mean, you look on his Twitter, it's still active, but he hasn't used it in over a year. His last post was February 12th of 2014, and there were people out when that video got released. It was they were using that reply from that post as a way of commenting on the story to him and see if it would reach him. Staying off of social media when you're in the type of a scandal like this is the way you do it. I mean, look at Richie Incognito. The guy totally disappeared. He was public enemy number one for a while because of his bullying scandal in Miami. Now all of a sudden he goes away from social media. He disappears from the limelight. He gets picked up by Buffalo eventually. And I thought, you know, I said to myself, it might be a little hard for one Ray Rice to get a job in the NFL considering he is an aging running back as opposed to a Michael Vick who was still kind of in the prime of his career when he got this dogfighting scandal, got arrested, got a year ban, got another year. I mean, he got a year in jail and got the year ban, came out and was signed again. I think Ray Rice is going to get signed in the offseason, and we're going to see exactly where he's going to go because, as we know with all of these scandals, time heals all wounds. I mean, come on. Penn State was cheering against Maryland, was jeering against Maryland, no means no.
Yeah.
Stones in a glass house.
I suppose we live in this era where if you own up to the crime, if you own up to the punishments that you're about to receive, whether it be in a courtroom or publicly, I guess as time goes on and Ray Rice continues to make the right decisions, we'll look back on this and say it was all one big mistake.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. The magic number is 17. 17 in a row for the Lady Terps. Wow, they have not lost a game since early December, Josh.
Yeah, four more games left on their regular season schedule, Big Ten schedule, and they will be legal to drink, 21.
Yeah. I mean, how about that?
We do not condone college drinking, ladies and gentlemen.
Wait, unless you're over the legal age limit, yeah, you do.
Yeah, but some dorms don't allow it, do they?
Well, yes. I didn't really have like a dorm life in college. I was more of a go to college locally and go to college from home
kind of guy. I was a dorm person, actually.
Really?
Well, not really. I just visited on the weekends.
I mean, I went to a couple dorms myself.
Yeah.
When, you know, and wanted to go to college and party and everything like that. Yeah, that happens to just about a lot of people. But at the same time, I didn't stay in a dorm. I mean, I wouldn't probably be caught in a dorm nowadays because a lot of college dorms, they have problems with bed bugs nowadays.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is not a good sign right there if you're staying in dorms. But Maryland women, though, of course, 17 games in a row, you are right, 14-0 in the Big Ten, and no more ranked opponents left on their schedule. They can pretty much roll through this regular season schedule.
Now, don't get ahead of yourself, though, there, Josh, because if they think that, then they take a game off or two, and they end up losing.
Yeah, but at the same time, you're still going to find yourselves, what, 25-2? With that record there, or 25-4, excuse me, that's still a pretty good record.
Yeah, it's an outstanding record. They're ranked number five for a reason.
Well, still number five, of course, because the other top four teams did not budge.
Yeah, and they are first in the Big Ten. They could be, well, how about this? They can be the first team since Purdue to go 16-0. Purdue went 16-0 in 1998.
Wow. Such a long time ago.
This is the Maryland women's first year in the Big Ten. They have made a statement by saying, here we are.
Now, what about the Maryland women in terms of their all-time regular season record? Because I'd happen to think this is their best start ever as a college basketball team.
Well, that and you consider it was, what, 2006 when they won the...
Yeah, when Brenda Freeze led them to the national title.
Yeah, it was way back in 2006. Seems like it was just yesterday, but wow, that we're going on 10 years since that happened.
I think they might have lost a few games during that regular season. I'll definitely check that out real quick, of course.
But then you look at the way the Maryland women have been performing this year. We're once again talking about them before we talk about the Maryland men. Now, the Maryland men had an up week this week, but hey, you know what? The women are still rolling right now in the Big Ten, and they are well on their way to a berth in the tournament come March. And let's see what they do in the Big Ten tournament. Maybe they could be an automatic bid by the way they've just been beating these teams up.
And by the way, looking at that, yes, this was the 2006 championship was Maryland, of course. But trying to figure out their record here, just looking at it. But
their regular season record there. You're looking it up while we're on the radio. Good stuff.
Yeah, I know, right? So looking here in 2006...
By the way, I just want to mention it right here about the lack of information on women's basketball on the internet. I mean, you look at – if you Google Maryland men's basketball right about now, you get their schedule. You get – Google automatically posts their schedule and gives you their games and their box score. You type in Maryland women's basketball, you've got to actually click on Maryland women's basketball site. And it's either that or the opposing team's site are the only news sources for Maryland women's basketball. It was a – you know, looking up information on the women's basketball team, unless you didn't watch the games, is a little bit tougher than, you know, you would think.
I mean, you'd also happen to think, too, if you go on ESPN.com, they will show you photos from Associated Press and Getty Images from men's basketball games, but there's none available for women's basketball.
And as a matter of fact, the stories on women's basketball is more like a Twitter post.
Exactly. Oh, by the way, their 2005-06 record when they won the national title, 34-4, 12-2, in then the Atlantic Coast Conference.
Okay, so they're off to a better start right now than what they were in the championship year.
Yeah, but you also got to keep in mind, too, they're still facing the team. They're still going to end up crossing teams like Notre Dame, Connecticut, teams that are at the top right now. So that's going to be a tough mountain to climb for the women's basketball team. Let's look at their top performances from their last two games. We'll start off with the then-ranked number 18 Rutgers Scarlet Dames, who Maryland just beat 80-69 at the Xfinity Center. Top performer, of course, we've been talking about her the last several episodes, the guard Lexi Brown, who had 19 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals against the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. Of course, that game, 80-69, and just an excellent performance by the Lady Terps. It just seems like whenever that they're at the Xfinity Center, they're nearly invincible.
That they are. Kind of like the men, so to speak, because they have the great record at the Xfinity Center. Not so much on the road, but the Lady Terps, different story.
Well, let's go back to that Rutgers game real quick off the bench. Alexis Harrison, the redshirt freshman forward, had 7 points, and even though that wasn't really impressive, here was the impressive stat. She had 12 rebounds off the bench, 4 defensive, 8 offensive. So when you win 80-69, those 8 offensive rebounds stand out more than anything, and we always praise offensive rebounds on this show.
Yep, that we do. Going to the Michigan State game, though, they had 5 players that had double digits.
Yeah, and even though it seemed like a close game at the time, 75-69 win for the Lady Terps, they still held their own. They still shot the ball pretty good. I mean, we can look at their top performances here. For example, Shatari Walker-Kimbrough, the guard, had 15 points. She had 3 steals, 3 assists, 8 rebounds, of course, 6 of them defenses, 2 offensive, but that's okay. Brianna Jones, the center, 17 points, 11 rebounds, 7 defensive, 4 offensive. And this team is just great defensively. They are great on the rebound. They get the balls right out the board, and it has resulted in this 23-2 record, 14-0 in the Big Ten. And looking at the remainder of their schedule as we go on, it's probably safe to say we have at least two more episodes before we get to the Big Ten tournament. They have Wisconsin on the road, which will be a 9 o'clock game on February the 19th. On February the 23rd, they face Penn State at Xfinity Center, 7 o'clock game. February 26th, versus Indiana, their final home game of the regular season. And then March 1st at Northwestern. And that's the remainder of their schedule right there. 4 more games for the Lady Terps. And all of them against unranked teams, even though 2 are on the road and 1 could play spoiler. But then again, I could be wrong.
We could see that. We could see it maybe to the point where maybe the men and the women have similar finishes. But moving on to the men now... No, we don't have to play the alarm. Cut that. No.
Yeah.
They've done good this week.
They're on a 2-game winning. Well, 2 games, not really a winning streak, is it? I thought 3 would be considered a winning streak. 2.
I don't know. Didn't you hear John Candy in Rookie of the Year? And the Chicago Cubs are at their highest winning streak of the season.
No, but I think
2.
Yeah, but I think Lou Brown said it best in he said it best in the movie Major League, where he said, "If we win two, that's two in a row. We win three, that's a winning streak. It's happened before." Yeah, I think two is two in a row. So Maryland men have won two in a row, and they've climbed up from number 19 to number 16. They avenged the butt whooping they took at the Hoosier Dome several games ago, and ended up beating Indiana close, but still win 68-66.
Oh, what a game that was, too. I mean, it came right down to the wire.
Late surge, too, by the Terps.
I saw that three-pointer that was attempted at the end, and then it was an offensive rebound that was gotten from it, and he didn't put it through. I was going to myself, oh, on the edge of my seat on that game in Indiana. It was a far cry from the Michigan State game that where Melo Trimble just completely went off, and I called him Trimble.
Well,
there's an L-E there, Ray.
Des Wells and Melo Trimble both combined.
You did it too.
I said Trimble.
There you go.
36 total points. Looking at the rebounds, of course, Melo Trimble had 5. Des Wells had 2. And also, you got to look at another great defensive play by DeMonte Dodd, who didn't have any points but had 4 blocks in the game. And those blocks certainly help on the defense for the Terps, who were lacking defense against the Indiana Hoosiers in the first game of the regular season. And look at their three-point field goal percentage, Ray. 47.6% for the Terps. That is a huge improvement right there.
Also, free throws. I mean, come on. The Maryland Terrapins are ranked number 2 in terms of free throws overall. Not just in the Big Ten. Overall in college basketball. They know how to take advantage of the penalty shots.
Yeah, and so, therefore, they beat the Indiana Hoosiers, avenging that bad loss at the Hoosier...
At the Hoosier Dome.
Do you call it the Dome or the Hoosier House?
I would call it the Hoosier Dome.
Oh, the Hoosier Dome, yeah. So then the Terps go and face Penn State on the road, and everybody thought, oh, here we go. Terps are on the road again. They're going to lose again. They haven't won a road game in several weeks. They were in trouble against Penn State to start off the second half, but towards the end of the second half, they were shooting the ball a lot better. They were rebounding the ball a lot better. Melo Trimble was having an excellent game, 20.6 rebounds, 4 assists for the freshman guard.
Don't shy on Des Wells, though. I mean, he is the co-Big Ten player of the week. 22 points.
22 points, 6 rebounds for Des Wells. And also, you have to give credit to Jake Lehman, who's still... putting up the defense and still putting up the rebounds out there. 13 points, 2 blocks, 4 rebounds. And looking at Maryland's bench, still having trouble getting point production off the bench. But needless to say, it was still a good, productive night for the Maryland Terps as they beat Penn State 76-73. Nittany Lions just not good at all in the Big Ten, 3-10. And if Maryland would not have been able to pull that off, their ranking probably would have dropped to 23-24. Could have been in danger of being unranked.
Yeah, they could have been dropped out of the top 25, but lo and behold, they've moved up 3 spots in the last week, so therefore they are not worthy of the alarm this week.
What's their probability in making the March Madness there?
Well, I've seen sites list them at 99%.
So it's a surefire bet that they will be there with the other 63 teams, I should say.
Barring the Xfinity Center doesn't catch fire.
Barring that they don't go 0-5 the remainder of their Big Ten regular season schedule. Let's look at their schedule here real quick.
3 out of their last 5 games are at home at Xfinity Center.
Is good.
They've got Nebraska, Wisconsin, and Michigan at home. And then Rutgers and Nebraska, they're on the road for. And one of those teams, Wisconsin, is ranked. They are number 5. They are the one team that really, really scares you in terms of the schedule. Everybody else, though, very beatable for the Maryland Terrapins. I mean, Nebraska, they got them twice. Rutgers, Nebraska's 13-12, by the way.
By the way, Rutgers 10-16 and Nebraska 13-12 last 2 road games of the season. And you'd happen to think, though, if those teams are not in it and they are going to be holding on to a miracle to make it in the tournament, if they win the Big Ten tournament, you could see Maryland routing them at the end of the season, especially if, say, they go on a 4-1 run there. Looking at the Nebraska game at home, I do think that will be a win for the Terps as long as they play clean basketball like they had in the last 2 games. Wisconsin is going to be a very tough game for them, even at home, because the only way we see that game going for the Terps is they have to be spot on with every shot they make. Defense has to be good, and the Xfinity Center needs to be loud. I'm talking the February 8th Iowa game loud when Maryland was just off their game completely. But Wisconsin's a very talented team, of course, number five. But unlike women's basketball, a top five team could end up losing along the way, and Maryland could be that team.
That they could, and we shall see what they do in the Big Ten tournament. I see them as a three seed in the main tournament.
I see them hopefully ending up being a two seed in the Big Ten. If they make it to the semifinals or finals, I see them being a three. They make it to the finals, they have to be at least a three, at most a two.
The Baltimore Sports free-for-all.
Pitchers and catchers report is a few days away until this podcast is uploaded, of course.
Spring training, what is that right now? We're still covered in snow.
Yeah, spring training is seeming like a pipe dream right now. You're just waiting to get to Florida and just sit in Sarasota under the sun, just a bright, hot sun.
Josh, we're losing listeners because you're making them jealous.
Well, we're not making them jealous. We're in this together. We're in this cold together.
I was about to say, yeah, we're in the cold. We're in heat right now, but the cold is outside the heat right now.
Why would we do a podcast in the snow?
That would be cool. We should do that.
That would be...
Put it on YouTube.
That would be trendy. Yeah, that would be very trendy right there if we did that on YouTube. Of course, we would hope for some donations for suffering frostbite. But, yeah, the Baltimore Orioles are going to be suffering anything but frostbite as they get to Sarasota for spring training. And some of the biggest questions going into Orioles spring training, no, it's not the free agent signings or whatever. No, it's not going to be that.
That's my voice, by the way.
I know, it's not your voice, but...
No, I'm saying... No, I mean, that is my voice,
it
but
is your
you're
voice,
taking
but
it.
I'm taking it, yeah.
Yeah.
But left field and right field for the Baltimore Orioles is going to be – there's going to be a competition there, left field and right field, even with the Travis Snyder acquisition that happened several weeks ago.
Yeah, it used to be in the offseason you would wonder who would be playing left field if it wasn't Nolan Reimold after he became injury-prone. But right field, center field were pretty much staples. It was Adam Jones, Nick Markakis. Now it's just Adam Jones out there. Look, he's not going anywhere. Spoiler alert. That's the one outfield position that's not in contention.
Are you sure there is no competition in center field, Ray?
I mean, I could just see Buck right now go up to Jones and be like, hey, you know what, Jonesy? We're gonna make you compete for that spot in center field. He's like, you're joking, right?
Like, no, I'm not joking.
I mean, where's the cameras at? Am I being punked by the fan cave again?
Adam Jones is going to be – he's going to be 30 years old this coming season, right? So he's in – of course, he's in the prime of his career in center field. And as we've seen in recent history with guys like Torrey Hunter, Ken Griffey Jr., pretty much anyone that plays center field for a good length of their career, Adam Jones, it's safe to say he's safe there for the next 5 years.
Yep.
Unless he goes on a considerable Mo Vaughn-like weight gain.
Or he goes on a big slump like Brady Anderson.
Or that too. I don't think that's going to happen, though. I mean, he's been pretty consistent most of his career. There haven't been any major spikes in his numbers.
No, there hasn't, and yet he was one of the best two-strike hitters in the league, and people still busted on him for swinging at the outside curve. Yeah, the outside curveball, low and outside, bad golf ball. But he was one of the better two-strike hitters in the league, and that was his thing. It was like, every time I watch, he's always striking out and looking at that. It's because you're looking for it.
And you're like, see, this is what I'm talking about here, folks. Golf ball swing.
Nobody talks about when he hits a home run with two strikes.
Oh, no, it gets brought up. You see the AJ 10 posts and everything like that on Facebook and Twitter.
Nobody other than Adam Jones talks about that.
Oh, that's
or it. Anybody on the Baltimore Orioles squad.
Well, looking at left field and right field, where Adam Jones won't be playing up both positions unless fans put a fund together to get Adam Jones cloned, which would be pretty creepy. But needless to say... And left field and right field, according to the Baltimore Orioles website, the team depth chart, left field has Alejandro Diaz. This is unofficial, of course. This isn't until it is official once we get to opening day, of course. Once it's opening day, then we have the official starters. But right now, this is merely a competition. Left field, you have Alejandro Diaz as the starter. Right field, you have Travis Snyder. Now, who's backing these guys up?
Steve Pierce.
Nope. Steve Pierce, of course, is one of the backups in left field and right field. He's third on the depth chart there. Behind Travis Snyder for second is David Lowe. Now, going to left field, you have Travis Snyder as the second alternate behind Diaz. Third's David Lowe. Fourth is Steve Pierce. Now, let's look at the non-roster invitees, of course, as we go into Orioles spring training.
Do we have to mention Nolan Reimold, though?
Well, he has to be mentioned, of course, because let's face it, he's going to be the odd man out, because it's not going to be Matt Tuiasosopo, who I'm sure people are scratching their heads saying, who is Matt Tuiasosopo? And Chris Parmalee, who really hasn't seemed to caught on with most major league clubs. So barring five injuries on the Orioles outfield depth chart, Chris Parmalee is not going to make the opening day roster.
What about Daryl Alvarez, though?
That is an interesting point there as we look at Daryl Alvarez, who was going to be 26 coming into the season if he makes the major league roster, at the Cuban prospect, of course, in his minor league career in 157 games, has 19 home runs, 97 RBIs, has a .311 batting average, and a .336 on-base percentage. Granted, this is with four minor league teams throughout his minor league career. And last season, of course, with two teams, was Alvarez's best year as a minor league player. He had 15 home runs, 87 RBIs, a .306 batting average, a .330 on-base percentage, and played 135 games total. Now, whether he will have that success going facing major league talent in spring training remains to be seen. And we brought up his fielding percentage career-wise, his right field fielding percentage, and we say right field because that is a big spot for the Orioles, .958 fielding percentage in right field.
That is quite a respectable fielding percentage. Not quite as high, though, as Nick Markakis, which that's a tall order to live up to. I mean, come on. Nick Markakis is one of the best right fielders in the league, and you're only waiting for it to be a matter of time before he wins another gold glove out there and gets an all-star vote, gets finally an AL East title before he leaves, and now he's gone, and he's got to be replaced. We have the questions to be answered here on the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All going into the regular season. It's going to be a mixture of all those guys, Josh, because Buck likes to play the matchups. He likes to see who's going to be batting left, who's going to be batting right. And maybe on a good day, maybe on a bad day, you could see Deyatsa playing left. You could see Lowe playing left. It's going to be a combination of all of these guys. Steve Pierce as well. I mean, the way his bat was Steve Pierce had kind of a resurgence last year with his bat.
Nolan Reimold.
No, probably not. I'm gonna file that into the.
If Nolan Reimold is your starting left fielder for the Baltimore Orioles, I guarantee you, the minute he makes a diving catch in the outfield, he's gonna shatter into glass pieces.
Yeah,
he'll be Mr. Glass from that movie Unbreakable.
I'm going to file that into the probably not going to happen category for one Nolan Reimold.
Theoretically, though.
Being on the opening day left field starting position.
Oh, I thought you meant shattering into glass, making a catch.
No, I mean, well, maybe that could happen. I mean, the guy is injury prone after all. Even though the guy said to one Jerry Coleman that he's not injury prone, and the next day, whoop, out for the season. Up, see you, buddy. Oh, thank you. Thanks for playing. Big gulps, huh?
Yeah, so left field, let's just start off with left field, though. You have Deyasa, Snyder, Lowe, and Pierce as the main competitors. Delvin Young was on that list before, but most skeptics have convinced Orioles brass that Delvin Young is best suited for the designated hitter competition with Steve Pierce.
Which, that is a position that needs to be filled as well, with one Nelson Cruz going away.
And Young can hit.
Yep, and he actually proved to be pretty decent in the playoffs, so he's clutch.
Yeah. But looking at Deyaza as your starting left fielder, and this is, of course, according to projections, this isn't anything official, folks. Deyaza will be 31 to start off the major. Well, will be 30 and then become 31 a couple days later, April 11th. Deyaza last season, looking at his statistics, he had 8 home runs in 56 games, well, with two teams, of course. His batting average was .252, on base .314. So one out of four times, Deyaza is going to connect for a hit. One out of three times, he'll get on base. So the guy does get on base. The question is his production going to be enough to merit being the starting left fielder? And considering what Steve Pierce did last season, and this was a guy who me and Ray wrote off immediately last season.
Now, we got to bring that up, too. I mean, come on. We gave ourselves a pat on the back earlier this episode talking about how, yeah, we predicted the timeline of when that video was going to be released for Ray Rice. But, yeah, we also we were also kind of making fun of Steve Pierce and looking at the way we're like, he's still on the roster? And talking about how Buck Showalter's like, okay, guys, we got to play somebody on waivers and maybe it's this guy over here, and Steve Pierce is in his head's like, please not me, please not me, please not me. And Buck Showalter's like, not you, not you, you.
looking at the numbers here, 47 of Steve Pierce's 99 hits in 338 at-bats in 102 games, 47 of those hits, extra base hits, 26 doubles, 21 home runs, both career highs. Major League, actually the doubles tied a career high. His home runs were a career high, and he had 49 RBIs, a .293 batting average, and a .373 on-base percentage.
It would be safe to say that he had a career year.
Yeah, it's safe to say he had a career.
Let's
just sum it up here. He had a career year. He
keeps inserting our own feet into our own mouths here about one Steve Pierce, about how we were riding down on the guy earlier parts of 2014, and he turns out to have quite the stellar year for one Steven Pierce. So, well, at one point, he was a Yankee reject. Now he's an Oriole treasure, and we'll probably be seeing him mainly, you know, switching between DH, between Delmon Young and him, and maybe playing a little bit of outfield on a good day or maybe a bad day. But I'm thinking Deazza and left, and I'm thinking Pierce will be probably a right fielder, switching between him and Lowe.
Now, let me ask you this, because it's safe to say that both men will get equal amount of playing time, Deazza and Pierce, because we don't know what's going to happen with Nolan Reimold. We don't know what's going to happen with Dario Alvarez. We don't know what's going to happen to any other guys trying out for outfield positions.
Hey, maybe it's safe to say that Buck Showalter doesn't know.
Exactly. Now, let's say Deazza is quick in left field and can field the ball well, but at the same token, Steve Pierce puts up the offensive numbers to merit a starting left field spot. Let's say Pierce is not as fast as Deazza, but let's say he fields just as good and his power is there for 2015. Who do you take? Do you take the guy that's sure-handed in left field, or do you take the guy that's okay in left field but puts up the numbers?
I would say the guy that puts up the numbers, because...
So you would sacrifice defense for offense in this situation?
Maybe in left field, depending on lefty-righty matchup, on who you got on a good day. You got more righties that can hit the ball to left field, then you would have a better left fielder. But if you have a lefty who hits the ball to right field, then, yeah, you would have to put in the better defensive man right there. So, all in all, it's up in the air about if it's going to be left field, right field, who's going to be your opening day starter. At this point, not even Buck knows.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Little League scandals. I cannot believe that this is a thing.
What did those little cheaters do this time, Ray?
Well, apparently there was an out-of-region recruiting there for one Jackie Robinson West that caused them to lose their title and everything. But this makes me beg a bigger question as to why are we nationally televising Little League World Series?
Well, that's the same reason that we're televising the actual World Series in Major League Baseball. It's the same reason that we have the Olympics, where we feature hundreds of gymnasts from across the world, but only three can be determined the three best in the world. It's the same reason. We want to see who the best Little League team is out there.
Those parents, though, on those teams...
Diehard.
Complete diehards. You got the Bat Dad to the Randy Marsh in that one episode of South Park where they kept trying to fight each other. I'm sorry, I thought this was America. And they were going at each other, and I can't help but think that is a real-life representation of Little League parents, the most extreme Little League parents.
See, I'm in the minor in that whole thing, because I would have enjoyed playing baseball and getting pizza every night.
Well, yeah, you get that, but do you have to be on national television where the world can see you?
I would have thought it would have been pretty cool at the time. I think the kids like the exposure, because once in a lifetime thing.
From the outside looking in, yeah, it looks really cool when you're like, hey, I get to be on TV as a little kid. But do you not understand the pressures that come with being in the national spotlight, having a big, huge spotlight on you and having at least a million people looking at you?
I'll take a line from the movie Mr. Baseball. It was an early 90s movie with Tom Selleck, where he goes to a very strict Japanese league team, where he just said to the manager in plain English, baseball is supposed to be fun, just like it's supposed to be fun in the Little League Baseball for these little kids. Or I was going to say little boys, but since we have Monet Davis, who was a complete phenomenon in the 2014 Little League World Series, I guess you have to say little kids now, because girls have a much better opportunity to start for these teams. But let's focus on Jackie Robinson West. If you've been living under a rock in the sports world, you heard that the 2014 national champion, Jackie Robinson West, was stripped of their title, their 2014 title, because basically they had a couple players on their team that played outside of their district, therefore breaking the Little League Baseball rules and having their title stripped from them. Now, what followed afterwards, of course, was complete outrage from the city of Chicago. Not outrage towards the adults who caused this situation to happen for the team, but more so towards Little League Baseball for sticking to the rule book and standing by their guns. And
how dare they?
Yeah, how dare Little League Baseball stick by the rule book and strip a team of little kids their national title? Now
that sounds terrible.
It does sound yeah, of course. The newspapers want to make it sound terrible.
When you phrase it like that.
When you phrase it like that, of course. I mean, but you did have some instances where people were calling the kids cheaters. And look, here's the thing. They're kids, okay? They play baseball. They play baseball very well. I mean, obviously, they were the champions last season. But it's to the point where even though they have their title stripped, you can still call them champions. You can call them the, I guess, the untitled champions because they had the title. Now they were detitled, so they're untitled champions.
Detitled?
They were detitled. They had the title.
I would go with the word stripped of a title.
It sounds harsh if you say it that way.
Anyway, it's more of as in the record books, it's vacant. The championship is vacant at that point. There was no winner. It's a no contest for the year of 2014.
Well, they gave it to the runner-up, of course, though.
Well, I'm looking at the whole Little League World Series, and I just look at it, and I'm thinking, who demanded that we see Little League Baseball on national TV? Who decides that, hey, we should have it and see what kind of audience we should have right there? But I'm also looking at the Jackie Robinson West scandal, and I can't help but kind of relate to being out of district, since I was out of district myself. Not only playing baseball, but also I was out of district in school.
So you blatantly knew that you were breaking the rules.
Yeah.
How dare you?
Because my parents wanted me to go to school in a different district to where I can go to my grandmother's house at the end of the day and not have to do that because, hey, both my parents worked. I had no babysitters out there, so they left me in the care of their parents, my grandparents, after school ended. And also, they really didn't want me going to school in the area that my parents lived in. They thought my grandparents' district was better.
I'll give you that one, of course. But looking at this whole thing, I gotta say, my gripe isn't necessarily with Little League Baseball in this. I believe they made the right decision. But that's needless to say, I do feel bad for the children involved with Jackie Robinson West, who had fun on that baseball field, who won the title. You can say fair and square or whatnot, they still had to play the games.
Not on the same scale, but also have a little bit of experience having a championship stripped from me.
Well, okay. All right. Well, you had to put that little add-in in there. But
yeah, I've had experience with that by saying that, you know, in the Cub Scouts, I was actually the Boy Scouts at the time, Pinewood Derby, not on the same scale. Okay, I just wanted to bring this as a talking point, is that I had that title stripped from me because I won the Pinewood Derby, and I didn't really win a lot as a kid. That was something that I did win, and I was happy and excited. I'm like, wow, I can actually win this thing. And they said I had illegal tires on my car, even though it was Boy Scout approved, and I bought them from a Ben Franklin store. And I was upset, just hurt, and it took me a while to recover from that. And I just said, but at the end of the day, I finally said, you know what? F the Boy Scouts, and I had two fingers in the air.
So you think the kids are going to say, F Little League Baseball, we're not going to play baseball anymore, we're going to be discouraged from this whole thing?
That could happen to a few of them.
But do you blame Little League Baseball for this whole thing, or for following the rule book? Or do you blame the adults who influence this culture of, it's okay to cheat as long as you don't get caught? Because you got to remember, the great late Eddie Guerrero once said, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. But I don't think it's something you teach to a little kid. I mean, especially if you're playing a fun game like baseball.
Well, let's put it this way, Josh. Life is not fair. That's something you can definitely teach a kid right there with this whole situation. It's not fair. And you know what? Yeah, we definitely did cheat there. And okay, in that situation, it's kind of weird. But sometimes you cheat to survive. Like, let's say you are unemployed for a while and you want to get into a restaurant and have a job there and at least get paid for it, but you can't pass the entrance test to get there as a waiter.
But if you know somebody that's there who's higher up in management,
and if you carry a little bit of index cards in your pants pockets, there you go. You're in there. You're not just cheating to, you know, get ahead. You're cheating to survive, because sometimes you just have to do that because everybody else is doing it too, and it's a dog-eat-dog world. Life is not fair.
Now,
not condoning the Little League World Series thing, because this is a nationally televised Little League World Series event that has a huge spotlight, huge ramifications for everything that's involved. And I just have to say, when you're at that level, then the rules certainly should apply.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we can look at the outrage from the Chicago politicians that are saying, how dare Little League Baseball for following the rule book? You took this title away from the kids. No, the adults in charge of the team had the title taken away. They knew what they were doing.
What is the key word in those sentences you just uttered? Chicago.
Uh-huh.
They're the ones that are outraged.
Oh, you mean the same city that has the NHL team, the Blackhawks, whose fans were pretty much booing or jeering against Jackie Robinson West when they made an appearance following that whole scandal? Oh, those fans? Yeah, that happens, yeah. I can see your point right there with Chicago. I mean, I know every city isn't perfect out there in America, but if you are a Chicago politician and you condone this form of rule-breaking, that is a huge problem right there. But not only that, you're passing the blame to the officials and not to the coaches, the adults that are in charge of this team that knew what was happening. You know, you got to learn to take accountability, because any responsible person out there that knows they're in the wrong will be the first to confront somebody and say, I'm sorry, I was the one that cost you guys this. It is my fault. If you guys can forgive me in time, I want to redeem myself. I want to make it up to you, and we'll go back at it next year, and we'll do it fair and square. That is what a real leader does, not what this head coach did with Jackie Robinson West. Instead, he just goes to the team and says, guys, listen, you're not national champs anymore. Little League Baseball screwed you guys. No, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. It was them. It was them. Blame them. That's not leadership right there. And honestly, in my personal opinion, Ray, this damages the sport of Little League Baseball, because you have people that are in the sport, adults in the sport, that are telling these kids it's okay to break the rules. It's okay to break the rules if you win a championship, as long as you don't get caught. That is not a culture that you teach young kids.
Wrapping up the show, it is time for our two-minute rants. Josh, you do the honors of going first this week.
Okay, this week I wanted to talk about one Kevin Durant, you know, the superstar player from the lovable Oklahoma City Thunder. Yep, the same Thunder team that didn't have Durant to start the season, or Westbrook for several games of the season, but still managed to be a couple games over 500 despite those obstacles, and still find themselves in the thick of things in the lower seeds of the NBA playoff run. Or so much the chase for the playoffs, needless to say. Anyway, there have been numerous media outlets that have been questioning if Scotty Brooks is the guy to lead the Oklahoma City Thunder, if he is the guy to lead them to the finals, if he is the guy to lead them to a championship. Not so much Russell Westbrook, not so much Kevin Durant, but all Scotty Brooks. Now, Kevin Durant, who has been as humble as anybody can be, if you remember when he won the MVP not too long ago, he thanked every single person on the Thunder's roster, the coach, his mother, everybody. He thanked everybody and was so humble and lovable that you wanted your kid to be like Kevin Durant growing up. Well, Kevin Durant did something uncharacteristic during NBA All-Star Weekend. He fought back against the media. The very media that portrayed him as a good guy. He fought back against them, not because he wanted to go all Marshawn Lynch on them, but because he was standing up for his coach, Scotty Brooks, saying, you guys don't know bleep, or you don't know crap. You don't know what you're talking about. You're going to report what you're going to report. You guys try to act like that you're my friend. Well, guess what? You're not my friend, and we're going to do things our way. We're going to win. If we're going to win, we're going to win. We lose, but you guys are going to report what you say anyway. So to the media out there that is being sour about this whole thing with Kevin Durant, please be quiet, because you're the first ones to instigate this whole thing in the first place.
The media instigating. What are the odds?
Skip Bayless, the talking head. You gotta love it, right? All right, Ray, what are you going to be talking about this week?
Jason Giambi. Now, there's a name you probably haven't heard in a while. Why? Well, because on Tuesday of this past week, he retired.
I didn't know he was still playing.
At the tender age of 43 years old, he is calling it a career. And if you join Joshua, the rest of America, in Baltimore in that statement right there, congratulations. I didn't know he was still playing myself. I didn't even know what team he was still playing for was one Jason Giambi. This was a guy that after his Balco scandal and being tainted by steroids in that whole, the first run before the Mitchell report and everything else that was going on, Biogenesis, that was plaguing Major League Baseball throughout the 2000s. And he stays on the Yankees for many, many years until 2008. He goes to Colorado. He goes to Oakland. He returns home to Oakland. You think that he's going to retire there? Nope. He goes to Colorado and is actually trying to get a head coaching job as well. Didn't really pan out too much. He goes to Cleveland. He's going to retire as a Cleveland Indian. And lo and behold, he had like a 133 average in 26 games in 2014. 2013, 183 in 71 games. That's almost like Brady Anderson numbers that he was putting up at the later end of his career. Yet, Giambi didn't really have too many of the spikes. He played consistently throughout his career. As soon as he hit the age of 28, he hit 33 home runs and hit over 30 home runs until he was 32. So five consecutive seasons, he hit over 30 home runs. Three of those seasons was over 40. So he hit over 30 home runs three more times in his career until he finally tapered off. And yeah, people didn't know he was still playing. He became a DH after playing mostly third base for most of his career and just became an everyday DH. And the guy, I mean, that's how you handle yourself in a scandal. You just stay quiet, and you just try to make up for it with your bat until you eventually just fade off in the limelight, not dying the villain.
So, in that relation there, what do you think of Andy Pettit retiring his number or retiring as a New York Yankee there?
Money grab. Because now,
what did you think of Chuck Knobloch's reaction, of all people?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That whole team, Andy Pettit, Chuck Knobloch, what was the other guy's name that I didn't really like? Paul O'Neill.
Oh yeah, I wasn't much of a Scott Brosius fan either.
So you gonna buy the Jeffrey Mayer glove for a $13,000 starting bid?
Hell no! I hope that thing has a hex on it.
Yeah, hopefully somebody buys it and burns it.
Yeah,
and puts it on YouTube.
Terrible.
It will go viral, and it will be lots of videos, and I will be very, very happy. We're going viral this week. This is another edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. What are we talking about next week?
Hopefully we have some more off-season news for the Baltimore Ravens. Hopefully something happens with the roster, even though it'd be too early this time of the year for any NFL transactions. Looking into practice reports. Hopefully no Orioles injuries. And maybe, just maybe, the Terps stay undefeated for the rest of the weekend. Well, starting this week, if you were the coach saying, let's start off 0-0.
Yeah, let's hope that happens. Yeah. But until then, this is another edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. I am Ray Atkinson.
I'm Josh Hall.
We will see you all.
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.